Live from the WJFF studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, Dan Hoost is here for his regular Friday appearance, straight from Monticello, with the latest Sullivan County government news, including an update on the public hearing for staggered terms for the legislature, the reopening of the Child Advocacy Center, and the latest from the county manager's newsletter. Plus, Phillipsport Community Center Music Night is tonight. Connor Mallon's Irish Pipe Band is playing. They're at the forefront of a confident, new, and important movement of Irish piping. Reports have good healthcare news for Wayne and Pike counties. We'll get the latest from the River Reporter's Ruby Rayner. And revisiting one of our favorite stories so far this year, Rosie Starr's audio postcard from local students releasing trout into the Calicoon Creek this spring. First, the news.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Janine Herbst. The Biden administration is urging Israel's military to make major changes to its evacuation policies in Gaza. That's according to a U.S. Embassy memo obtained by NPR. As NPR's Kat Lonsdorf reports, it comes after the Israeli military significantly increased evacuation orders for Palestinians in Gaza over the past month.
The diplomatic cable from the U.S. Embassy in Jerusalem, addressed to the U.S. State Department, contained an assessment from the U.S.'s leading aid agency about the adverse effects of Israel's increased evacuation orders. It found that the near daily pace of evacuations made Palestinians less safe and warned they could, quote, debilitate remaining humanitarian operations in Gaza. It acknowledged the likelihood of Israel stopping these evacuations was low. So instead, it said the U.S. government has focused on how the Israeli military could be doing them differently. It said the U.S. is advocating for several changes to Israel's evacuation methods in order to provide more safety for both Palestinians and aid workers. Kat Lonsdorf, NPR News, Tel Aviv.
The November ballot in Georgia will have six presidential candidates listed, not three, as has been the case for the past 20 years. Raul Bali with member station WABE in Atlanta has more.
Vice President Harris, former President Donald Trump, and Libertarian Chase Oliver had already made it onto Georgia's ballot. Now, Georgia Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger has decided a state administrative judge ruled incorrectly on two Democrat-backed ballot access challenges. As a result, Cornel West and the Party for Socialism and Liberation's Claudia De La Cruz will also be on the ballot. And so will Green Party nominee Jill Stein, based on a new state law that allows access to candidates who've made it onto 20 other ballots. All three are to the left of Harris, so she, not Trump, is most likely to lose votes to them. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. has already removed his name from Georgia's ballot. For NPR News, I'm Raul Bali in Atlanta.
Stocks opened higher today after new data showed inflation continuing to ease last month. As NPR's Rafael Nam reports, it makes it even more likely the Federal Reserve will cut interest rates next month.
A new report this morning confirms that inflation continues to ease. The Personal Consumption Expenditures, or PCE, price index rose 2.5% in July from a year ago. It was a mild pace that came within what economists had expected. The news is a relief for investors. It cements expectations for the Fed to start cutting rates at its next meeting in September. The main question is whether the Fed will be cutting interest rates by a quarter percentage point or by more. Rafael Nam, NPR News.
And on Wall Street, the Dow is up 41 points, the Nasdaq up 192, the S&P 500 up 38. You're listening to NPR News. University of Virginia is suspending a campus tour group, but the school says that decision had nothing to do with complaints that the service cast a negative light on the school and its connection to slavery. The university's guide service, run by student volunteers, has long been the focus of criticism from a group of conservative alumni that claims the tour alienates prospective students with what they say is a woke version of UVA history. But UVA says they suspended the tour group over concerns about staffing and that information given wasn't consistent. The student newspaper, the Cavalier Daily, reports the school will give tours led by paid student interns instead. An elephant in Myanmar has given birth to twins, a rare event at a sanctuary near Yangon. The BBC's Richard Howells has more.
The baby elephants, a female and male, were born 4 minutes apart on Monday at the Winga Boer elephant camp. This is a highly unusual event. Only about 1% of elephant pregnancies result in twins, and male and female twins are even rarer. The babies, named Pearl Sint and Cure Pearl, are being bottle-fed by their keepers as they're too small to reach their mother's breasts. Their 21-year-old mother is being given extra rations to keep her strong. Pictures on social media show the cute baby elephants being given lots of attention by staff as their mother looks on.
And again on Wall Street, the Dow is up 69 points. The Nasdaq is up 178 points. The S&P 500 is up 37. I'm Janine Herbst, and you're listening to NPR News from Washington.
Support for NPR comes from Sony Pictures Classics with Between the Temples, a new comedy starring Jason Schwartzman as a cantor whose world is upended when his grade school music teacher, played by Carol Kane, becomes his new bat mitzvah student. Now playing. This is NPR.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Well, it's Friday, and that means we get to hear from Mr. Dan Hoost, who is the communications director for the Sullivan County Government in Monticello, New York. Hello, sir.
Hello. How are you?
Good. How are you? Happy Labor Day weekend.
Yes, I can't believe we're already at that point. So,
and,
yes.
Is it really the end of summer, as we say?
I just hope it's the end of the oppressive weather. And, I mean, we've had last weekend was gorgeous. It was low humidity and a lot of sun. So I'm okay, even with some rain. The humidity is what I'd like to see disappear.
It's not the heat, it's the humidity.
Yes.
Cool today, though, and some rain showers. And it looks like it might be a cool, temperate this weekend. We'll get to the weather forecast at the end of the show. Let's talk about what's going on in Monticello. We've been talking about those staggered terms for Sullivan County government. Mm-hmm. Currently, as we've discussed, it's sort of a whole class moves in and a whole class moves out. And the legislature is now proposing staggered terms so that there's some institutional knowledge from folks. Mm-hmm. And that public hearing is coming up next week, September 5th.
Not only a public hearing, but a vote afterwards, which, based on what I can tell, is going to be a split vote. So we'll see. It may be very close one way or the other. It's one of those things legislators aren't sure whether this is the best way to go. It seems to be more a concern over how staggered terms would be implemented. Because of the even-numbered years for local elections that the state now has as a mandate, we can't have county legislators being elected in odd-numbered years. The proposal was to stagger the terms by having 4 legislators run for 3-year terms and 5 legislators run for 5-year terms. That would be in the 2027 election, because that's the last one we can have in an odd numbered year if the state law stands, which, by the way, it's being litigated, but we'll see. Legislators, some of them seem to prefer a 3-3-3 kind of setup or something different. So it will be an interesting conversation that happens on Thursday, and I do think there'll be some discussion. It starts at 8:45 a.m. with the public hearing, so the public is invited to come and share on Thursday, September 5th. What they think of the proposal. And that was why I created that fact sheet so that they could take a look. That's on our website, on our social media, available at the Government Center if you need a physical copy so that you understand what it is, because it's a little complicated to understand. And then immediately after that public hearing, the legislature is going to discuss it. And, I would assume have a vote of some sort of whether or not to adopt the local law. If they don't adopt the local law, if a majority says, no, we're not going to adopt this law, then it doesn't end up on the ballot in November for the public to decide on. If they do, then it ends up in November to be decided upon.
What are some of the pros and cons that you're hearing in advance of this?
Well, again, from what I'm hearing, the biggest issue is legislators want a little more flexibility with determining, three legislators for a 3-year term and then 3 legislators for another 3-year term and then 3 legislators for another 3-year term versus the proposal right now, which is 4 legislators for a 3-year term and 5 for a 5-year term.
So is it length?
It's that kind of thing. Yeah. It doesn't seem to be a huge debate about the idea itself of staggered terms. But really, the devil is in the details. It's all in how it would be executed, how it would be carried out. And if legislators aren't comfortable with that, they're not going to move forward with it.
You know, our board of trustees here at the radio station have staggered terms, but there was a time where we had to readjust, I think. Mm-hmm. And there was, you know, some folks were like, oh, feeling a little left out. But then on the other hand, there were a few folks who were like, I'll take the shorter term.
Yep.
Do you sense a little bit of that going on too?
Not really, because we're not at that point yet. Yeah. It's more about the process of how it's worked out, because in the end, it's going to be random selection. So legislators aren't necessarily, from what my read is, they aren't necessarily concerned about being the one that draws the short end of the straw, as they say. It's more about how this all pans out and what is best for the proper functioning of the legislature and to serve taxpayers. And I'm not saying that out of naivete or just because it's the party line kind of thing. I really, at this point, feel like that's the conversation is a legitimate debate about where we go with this. And I think, and I hope, people will get to see that debate up close in person or online on the video on Thursday. Because when you see how people discuss these things, how your elected officials are discussing, you learn sort of how they think and also get a window into how democracy moves, sometimes messily, but in a way that I think that kind of transparency is very valuable for people to see. So.
And that public hearing on staggered terms will be held Thursday, September 5th at the Government Center or online at 8:45 a.m. Or you can go to the county webpage at sullivanny.us for more information and that fact sheet.
Mm-hmm.
And let's move on to the Child Advocacy Center's reopening.
Yes. We've had a Child Advocacy Center for many years, but we've really put a lot more resources into it, really have done a focus on it. It's part of our public health building, but it's a separate part of it. It's actually a very secure area. This is what we might have in the past called our family violence response team. These are the folks who do that very difficult work of talking with children and families that have gone through abuse and neglect. Everything from sexual abuse to physical abuse to malnutrition. This is work I couldn't do, but they do it. We need people to do it. And they have created a very calming atmosphere there. We had a former legislator, actually Terry Ward, who painted the walls with these beautiful paintings that make even adults feel better. And we have a really great set of counselors, investigators, and administrators over there who are making sure that when children are put in harm's way, that we are there for them and can figure out not only how to get them out of harm's way, but how not to re-traumatize them. That's a real big thing I heard, which was, you know, you're asking kids to talk about a traumatic event. How do you do that in a way that doesn't add to the trauma they've already experienced? So it was great to see it. We work very closely with our police agencies, state and federal officials. They were all there. And it's one of those things our taxpayers should be very proud of that we have here, because other places do not have the kind of resources that we have invested in this.
We've talked about a couple of times before about the tax foreclosure auction that's coming up. Previously, we were talking about it in the terms of, like, if folks had back taxes, there was a window for them to go in and yep. rectify that. That's done now.
That window's passed.
So those properties are now going to go up for auction coming up. Mm-hmm. Did you get a good participation of folks kind of going back there?
Yeah, I would say from what I saw, and we mentioned this in Josh's newsletter that we'll be talking about, it was the lowest amount of properties up for auction that I've ever seen, just a little over 100. And I've seen over 300, over 800, over 1,000 before. And our treasurer's office, Nancy Buck, they work very hard to try to cull that list, because it's not something that we're looking with gleeful anticipation to sell somebody's tax foreclosed property at auction. Now, hey, there are some people who they get what they deserve because they have deliberately flaunted paying taxes. And as taxpayers, I think we all should be a little upset that they do that, and that's their just desserts. But there are also a lot of people who are just in a bad situation. Something happened that harmed them economically, and they haven't been able to pay their taxes. So we've worked very hard with them to keep those people in their homes, on their properties. And I'm proud to say that I think we've been successful just based on the numbers. But We will have those properties for auction September 11th. It's an online-only auction. You have to pre-register for it at AARauctions.com. That's our contractor, our vendor that does it for us, AARauctions.com. And you will find there, it's a list of auctions they'll have there, but the Sullivan County Municipal Auction is there, and it has a listing of all the parcels and properties. Most of them are those kinds of parcels that, you know, no one necessarily really wants, but there are a few in there, and you'll want to take a look. And if you want to put a bid in, make sure that you're registered.
So, yeah, they are the contractor for you, and they handle these kinds of things for other counties. So when you go onto the website, you'll see things happening in town of Wallkill, mm-hmm. South Windsor, Connecticut, Village of Goshen. But the Sullivan County Tax Foreclosed Real Estate Auction, if you scroll down a little bit there, you'll see that. And do folks need – is there a cost to register to be in the auction, or is it just go on and register?
There's a cost if you do a successful
bid. If you're successful, yeah. Right, but not mm-hmm. to
– yeah.
To go on.
I don't believe so, no.
And that's at AARauctions.com, and that's coming up September 11th. If you're just joining us, we're speaking to Mr. Dan Hoost, who's the Communications Director for Sullivan County Government. He joins us every Friday. And we wanted to talk about a safety meeting held with Sullivan West, with students there and faculty?
Not students, just faculty. Just the administrative team. But I was very impressed with this, because this is something that the Sullivan West superintendent, Dr. Kathleen Bressler, and our Division of Public Safety, specifically our Commissioner Scott Schulte and our Deputy Commissioner John Hauschild, worked out with them. And I think we should do this with every school in Sullivan County. We brought in not only our team, myself, the Division of Public Safety, our Sheriff's Office, even our Public Works team, but also the state police came. The local officials were there as well. Talking with the administrators, we actually had about a two and a half hour sit-down meeting where we went over what the school's safety protocols are. What, for example, the difference is between a lockout versus a lockdown. These are important things for all of us to know, and not everybody necessarily knows that. For example, I was involved because in mass casualty incidents, I could be the public information officer, the one that gets the information out there. So everybody needs to know who I am, but I need to know who everybody else is myself. So we got to meet each other in person. We had the State Department of Transportation was there, because they may have to close roads leading to a school if there was a some sort of, you know, God forbid, awful incident at the school. But also just to understand when there is maybe an urgent situation, but not an emergency situation. How does the school handle that? It's something, unfortunately, in this day and age, we really need to be talking about. And I hope to see us do this with all the other school districts as well. We posted some photos online for people to see about that, because I just think this is one of those really good ideas that people should know we're working on.
Good timing, of course, with meeting with faculty before the students come back, so yes. Refreshing them on what protocol is. You mentioned you're hoping to do it with other schools. Are you mm-hmm. lining that up, or are someone lining that up?
Yeah, I believe our public safety division is working on that with them. So, and it's eye-opening. Like, I didn't know that every window in a school building now has a number assigned to it, so that we can hone right in on where there might be an issue, you know, in getting people in or out of the building and that kind of thing. So it was really instructive, and it's all towards the safety of the staff, the faculty, the students, and also the parents that are coming to the school. Because if there is an incident, parents oftentimes want to rush to the school. That may not be the best thing to do. So, but you can't just stop them at their house. So how do you handle it when they do arrive near the school? So this was all very important stuff that hopefully makes these awful situations at least a little more professionally handled than some of what we've heard in the rest of the country has happened before. This is important work.
Let's take a break, and we'll be back with more from Dan Hoost, Communications Director at Sullivan County Government, including an incredible rescue story out of Arizona that actually started at the Sullivan County Airport. We'll have that right after a break. This is Radio Chatskill.
Every few weeks on the Michael Loader Monkeys with me, Graham Rice, here on Radio Catskill, we take a listen to one of Britain or Ireland's finest songwriter. This week, it's the Scottish marvel that is Corinne Powlett. So join me, please, for the songs and singing of Corinne Powlett on Sunday afternoon at 3.
If all your friends jumped off a cliff, would you do it too? This week, Mom's old cautionary tale finds new life on Selected Shorts with fiction about how far we go to fit in. I'm Meg Wolitzer, and I'm not leaping off anything, so tell Mom it's safe to join me.
Sunday night at 7 on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. We're speaking with Dan Hoost. He's the communications director for Sullivan County Government, and he joins us every Friday. Before the break, I did the teasy tease here, the incredible Arizona rescue story that started at the Sullivan County Airport. What's that all about?
Yeah. There was an eight-year-old boy who went missing in the, it was called, I can't wait to say this on the radio, the Coconino National Forest, just outside of Flagstaff, Arizona. Actually sounds like a lovely place to visit. He went missing as his family made their way out of Lava Cave, which is a popular subterranean trail in the park. They couldn't find him. Of course, this is out in Arizona, so what do you think our airport has to do with it?
What's the connection, well, Dan?
The call was put out to Hotsola, and we, of course, at the airport have the world headquarters of Hotsola Air. They were the ones who could get there the fastest, because I don't think there are any actual Hotsola corps right in Arizona. And the local corps were responding, nothing against them. But the Haverum of Rockland County and Hotsola Air partnered together, and they have a team that is specialized in search and rescue. They got themselves up to the Sullivan County Airport, and there's a video they posted about this that shows them taking off from Sullivan County and in a few hours landing in Flagstaff, Arizona, joining the other teams that were searching. And they ended up being the team that found 8-year-old Zion Maron, was his name, safe and sound. We're able to take him out of the forest. There are pictures. There are videos of this incredible rescue. It is very moving, very compelling. And it just was cool to watch their plane take off from Sullivan County Airport to speed its way towards Arizona. This is the part that we are playing now in many more stories than just that. I was there last night for a little opening they had for elected officials to see what they have there now. They had three full-size, what we would call corporate or business jets, but outfitted to be flying hospitals, basically. They had ATVs. They had a chopper. They had an RV mobile command center. This is a definitely a well-funded and well-appreciated organization that flies around the world on missions of mercy and to bring people from other countries to America, where we have some of the top healthcare in the world, even though we like to sort of complain about it, I suppose. But people come here to be treated. We're proud to say that Sullivan County International Airport is host to these wonderful people, to Hotsola Air, who uses it as a crucial place to base their equipment to literally save lives around the world.
Good to hear 8-year-old Zion is safe, and folks here had something to do with that.
Yeah, We did.
Related into EMS cars. Every time I see this, I think of flying cars.
Yeah.
We've talked about this before. It's featured in the latest county manager's newsletter. Again, the EMS fly cars. Let's explain what that's about.
Yeah, we even have actually an image of what this fly car is going to look like with its decals, and because it's Senior Care EMS, which operates downstate, but they are going to badge our vehicles with a prominent lettering that says Sullivan County, because these vehicles, four of them, are going to be exclusive to Sullivan County. They're going to be strategically placed around the county starting in just a few weeks, actually, on or about September 16th. And they are going to be a supplement to our existing ambulance corps. They are not here to compete with them. They are not here to replace them. They are here to support them, because there are many times where it's hard to get a crew together. Or if you do, you still have to get all the equipment ready and out in the ambulance and get to the scene. Well, the fly cars, the reason they're called that is they can fly right to the scene.
Right.
And they can get there before the ambulance does, stabilize the patient, make it easier for the ambulance to do what they need to do when they get there, and also, of course, increase the chances of that person surviving or having less injury than they would otherwise. So they are going to be stationed around the county. There'll be four of them, two for basic life support, two for advanced life support. They will not be transporting patients. They will not be billing patients. That will be up to the Corps. The Corps will do that. These fly cars are being paid for by county taxpayers at this point. And we're going to very closely monitor and adjust as needed this service, because this is a first for us. We want to make sure that this is working in a way that not only works for the patients, but for the Corps that it's supposed to be bolstering and supporting.
And the newsletter has some other highlights as well.
Yes, it does, actually. We had a little bit in there about the child care advocacy center that I was talking about, the tax auction. Also that we, of course, have a need for election inspectors, and we can take them as young as 17 now.
I was just going to ask you about that.
Yes, that's really interesting now. You can't vote at 17, but you can come sit at our polls and watch everybody else do it.
Show people how to do it.
Yeah, it's really, you'll be the smartest 17-year-old in your peer group, that's for sure, because you'll know how to vote before they even do. And we will pay you to do it. Of course, you don't have to be 17. You could be any age. Just if you're an adult, according to state law, you have to be a registered Republican or a registered Democrat to serve as a poll worker. But we will pay you $400 for Election Day to man our polls and help democracy function smoothly. Also, in our latest County Manager's Newsletter, which is called Inside Insights, we have the newest information and a picture of our airport terminal that is being built as we speak. It looks beautiful. It is a glue-laminated timber building, not a steel building. So the picture that you'll see will show wood. It's a wood-frame building, which is quite fascinating to see. And then we have some pictures of highlights from our Emergency Services Youth Academy that we did this past July, and we will be doing again this coming July.
Let's remind folks about that poll worker information, though. As you mentioned, high schoolers, 17-plus, and any age really can be paid. Yep. It's a $400 stipend for the day, and it's not just for Election Day on November 5th.
Yeah, we have 5th. Early voting as well, and we will pay you for the training as well. I should mention that. So, yeah, we need people for early voting. We need, of course, what we really need, because all our polls will be open, is Election Day. So that's the one I really want to highlight for people, is if you can be available on Election Day, and like I said, you're a registered Republican or Democrat, or you're, like I said, 17-year-old, who you can't be registered at that point, we will definitely be interested in talking to you. We'll pay you for the training and for your day of service. Just give a call to our Board of Elections, 807-0400. That's 845-807-0400. Operators are standing by. They would love to talk to you about this.
And just a reminder of the calendar of events, we are on the front door of September, which means we're going to be like hurtling toward November. But there are some key dates that come up in September, October. Early voting starts October 26th.
Yep.
And you can register for the general election up until the 26th. Is that right? I think I'm reading this correctly. If I'm reading a collective voter registration deadline for the general, the last day of applications have to be received by the Board of Elections to be eligible to vote in the general election by October 26.
I believe so, although I wouldn't wait that long.
Don't.
I would not.
Register in advance of
do
that.
Do it now.
Yeah, if you're not.
Yes.
And again, all of that information about the election on flying cars, not really. How to
one day.
One day. And everything else Dan's talked about is available at the county website, sullivanny.us. Mr. Dan Hoos, thank you so much for joining us again this Friday, and I hope you have a good Labor Day weekend. Any big plans?
Yeah, I might go down to Amish country. Nice. I'm looking to do that. And yes, I should remind people, although it's pretty obvious, we are closed on Labor Day. County offices are closed on Monday, so we will see you all on Tuesday.
And we'll see you next Friday.
Yes.
All right, Dan Hoos, thanks so much. We'll take a break, and when we come back, we'll head over to Wayne and Pike County in Northeast Pennsylvania for a look at a health report. It's good news. We'll tell you more after a break. This is Radio Chatskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Narrowsburg Union and Catskills Curated, presenting products of regional artists, artisans, makers, and craftsmen. Gift wrapping and shipping available on site. NarrowsburgUnion.com. The Cooperage Project in Honesdale, dedicated to building community through performance, learning, markets, and good times. TheCooperageProject.org. And from listeners like you who donate at WJFFRadio.org.
Join us for Radio Catskills 2024 Community Awards, September 12th, honoring individuals dedicated to environmental stewardship and sustainability, including Lori Ramey of the Upper Delaware Council and Lisa Lyons of Morgan Outdoors. Celebrate their hard work and commitment to healthier and more sustainable local communities at the 2024 Radio Catskill Community Awards, September 12th at La Sagone, Narrowsburg. Get your tickets now at WJFFradio.org.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. There's good healthcare news for Wayne and Pike counties in Pennsylvania. The latest reports from the Pennsylvania Healthcare Cost Containment Council are out. Jason Dole spoke to the River Reporter's Ruby Rayner for more.
So the news reports from the Healthcare Cost Containment Council provide a very interesting county-by-county rate of hospitalization and outpatient care. And they break down these reports into different categories, which can really give quite a bit of information. So they have age, gender, and specific health conditions. And it has, you know, data related to categories that are quite specific within opioid overdose, opioid use, preventable hospitalizations, diabetes, that can give you more of a in-depth sense of what healthcare looks like on a county-by-county basis. And so from that data, we were able to deem a little bit more about what's going on in Wayne and Pike, and some of the data is actually pretty positive.
Can you give us some examples of what the data is telling us?
Yeah, so in terms of the opioid data, it was pretty largely positive. So looking at just for a month from January 1st to December in 2023, the hospitalization rate for opioid overdoses in Pike and Wayne was too low to report. And that's in comparison to statewide numbers of a little over 21 per 100,000 residents that reported hospitalization for opioid overdose. So that's, you know, the fact that in both Pike and Wayne, those numbers were too low to report for opioid hospitalizations is definitely a positive. And that same low volume is true of maternal hospital stays involving opioids in both Pike and Wayne. They were too low to report, and that's compared to that statewide, which is a little over also 21 per 100,000 residents. And it is important to note, just in terms of this data, though it is positive, that it's focused on Pennsylvania hospitals specifically, so it doesn't include hospitals in Orange County, New York, or Sussex County, or New Jersey. So in many cases, in Pike and Wayne, residents are seeking care outside of Pennsylvania because those are the closest hospitals, like you mentioned, and there isn't actually any urgent care or hospital in Pike County itself. So that's one thing to consider when you're like looking at a positive trend in data, but it doesn't necessarily discount that completely, but good to keep in mind.
Is anybody doing anything about the fact that there's no hospital or urgent care in Pike?
Yeah, so the county commissioners are approaching the problem in a couple of different ways. One thing mainly is they're entering a partnership with Northwell Health to open an urgent care facility in Pike County. And they're also working to launch a Pike Medical Foundation to raise money to bring more medical services that will hopefully also work towards opening a small, centrally located hospital. But all of those things are in process and don't exist at this time. So there isn't any hospital or urgent care itself in Pike County.
Yeah, thanks to the River Reporter's Ruby Rayner, speaking to Jason Dole for that report. We'll take a break, and when we come back, some Irish pipe music in Phillipsport tonight. This is Radio Chatskill.
This week on Science Friday, why eels have captured the imagination of humans for thousands of years. Plus, why dogs are being used to stop the spread of invasive species.
The dog is going to be sniffing at about 5 to 7 hertz, and that causes unique airflow patterns.
That's on Science Friday from WNYC Studios.
Today, from 2 to 4 p.m. on Radio Catskill.
This is Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. The Phillipsport Community Center Music Night is tonight, and it's featuring Connor Mullins' Irish Pipe Band. They're at the forefront of a confident and new movement of Irish piping. Culture reporter Valerie Manzi has more.
Good morning, Connor, and welcome to Radio Catskill, and welcome to Sullivan County. Is this your first time here in Sullivan County?
Yes, thanks so much for having me. It'll be the first time there with the current setup. Really looking forward to it.
So your home is Ireland, correct?
Yep. All the band are all based in the north of Ireland. So I'm from County Armagh, and I'm joined by the rest of the band are from County Derry.
And let me update our audience about what we're going to be talking about. There's a music event coming up Friday, August 30th. It is going to be Connor Mullins and the Connor Mullins Band. Tell us about the music you're going to be sharing with our community.
Yes, of course. So over the shutdowns, the lockdowns and all that kind of stuff, I received some funding from the Arts Council in the North. And mm-hmm. It was basically to come up with this new concept, this new project. So I thought it would be a good idea to explore all the unique sounds of the Illan pipes. So the Illan pipes is my instrument. So they make a lot of weird and wonderful noises, as well as the main source of the melody through the chanter.
Now, so what are the Illan pipes?
So the Illan pipes it's the Irish bagpipe. So
okay.
It's our bagpipe.
Mm-hmm.
So they make some weird and wonderful noises. So I thought it would be a really interesting concept to take samples from the pipes and then turn them into a percussive element behind my own compositions. So it's a very interesting project, and it's been going down really, really well so far, especially in the States. We've been here a week now, so we've had a lot of festivals. I'm currently in the Midwest, in Chicago at the moment, doing some shows. So it's been really good fun. So the band touring with me is obviously myself on Illan pipes and whistles. I have Fintan Mulholland on percussion and whistles, Jack Warnock on guitar vocals, and we also have electric guitar in there as well from Paul Starrett.
And this is going to be music from your album Unearthed?
That's exactly right. So, as I mentioned before, I got some funding from the Arts Council in the North to basically create a new project, create a new album. And this is the kind of the outcome of that project. So Unearthed is the album. So it's unearthing a new sound, unearthing my own solo career, because everything kind of up to this point has been band material. I've been on tour with a band since 2016. So this is unearthing a new project for me and in a new, different light, I suppose.
And how does this differ from your previous work?
I suppose it's all my own compositions. I suppose it's maybe a little more modern approach, because it's got electric guitar and stuff on there as well. Although we do have an awful lot of kind of traditional music as well. Traditional songs from Jack as well, but it's a really interesting concept. So it's something I'm very, very proud of, and worked tremendously hard on. So it's been great so far.
Wonderful. How long have you been on tour in the States?
Only just a week now. So we're in the States for we're touring for 6 weeks.
Wonderful.
Yes, we finished the tour on the 30th of September. So it's great. Really, really enjoying it so far.
Well, I'm glad you are enjoying it, and I'm glad your audiences are enjoying it as well. Is there anything else you would like to add?
Maybe just that we'll hopefully see as many of you there on Friday as possible. Come with your dancing shoes on, and we'll have a good time.
All right. And that is this coming Friday, August 30th, at the Phillipsport Community Center. And I believe the doors open at 6:30. The concert is from 7 to 9. Bring your dancing shoes. And if you dance a whole lot, there'll be reinforcements of homemade pie. They're known for their wonderful homemade pie that they have at these events. And I'd also like to add that this event is underwritten by the Delaware Valley Arts Alliance. So have a wonderful, wonderful evening and enjoy the rest of your tour in the United States.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me. We'll see you soon.
Okay, good.
It's culture reporter Valerie Manzi speaking to Connor Mallon. The Irish Pipe Band is playing tonight in Phillipsport, and there's more information on their Facebook page or at mammocating.org. We'll take a break, and when we come back, we're going to revisit one of our favorite stories from Rosie Star, Trout Release Day. You'll want to hear it. It's a joyful story that happened this spring. It's next. This is Radio Chatskill.
Last year, over 100,000 people died from drug overdoses driven by fentanyl. And the fastest growing group is under 19. Fentanyl is the number one cause of overdose in Sullivan County. Whether you're a parent or an educator, you can have the right conversation now to potentially save a kid's life. Protect kids from the dangers of fentanyl. More information and resources at naturalhigh.org. Paid for by Catholic Charities of Orange, Sullivan, and Ulster.
Hey there, it's Jason Dole here, reminding you tomorrow is Radio Catskills Music Yard Sale, right here at our studios in Liberty, rain or shine. We've got records, CDs, cassettes, stereos, turntables, and so much more. It's the end of summer, we're cleaning house, so you're going to find some great deals. And I have to say, we have an amazing selection of high-value vinyl that's going to go quick. You won't find records this cool at other yard sales, so you better come to ours. The Music Yard Sale at Radio Catskill, 9 to 3 tomorrow.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Artist Cottage Bed and Breakfast, a newly renovated farmhouse that sleeps four with full gourmet cooked breakfast provided daily, located near the top of Hauk Mountain Road in the town of Bolton. More information at greatwesterncatskills.com.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Well, end of summer, and according to the Daddy Flies fishing report, the rain that's expected this weekend will help improve conditions for late summer, early fall fishing. Earlier this spring, local students released several hundred trout fingerlings into the Calicoon Creek in Jeffersonville as part of the Trout in the Classroom project. The Trout in the Classroom program brings science to life and connects students to watersheds and classrooms across North America and the United Kingdom. Trout Unlimited, along with a myriad of partners, facilitate the program within private and public schools in the U.S. Farm and Country's Rosie Star was on the scene in Jeffersonville in May, and she shared this audio postcard that we wanted to revisit.
If I were a trout,
just swimming in a stream,
I'd have a nice time.
I'd have a nice time.
If you know what I mean,
if you know what I mean,
say hi to a frog.
Say hi to a frog.
Who's looking for a fly?
Who's looking for a fly?
And then I'd hide in the weeds from the funny old muskrat and stay away from worms on hooks, cause I know that I'd rather live here in the stream till the day that I die.
Till the day that I die.
Hi, Rosie here in Jeffersonville on a lovely spring day, mid-May. I drove over to the Calicoon Creek to share in the fun of the 2024 Trout Release Day. It's an annual educational event where Sullivan West fifth graders release tiny brown trout into the cool, clear waters of the Calicoon Creek as the final exercise in the Trout in the Classroom project. The school's Trout in the Classroom project is a nationwide program, and it was created by Trout Unlimited. The students raise the trout from eggs supplied by the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation, the fish hatchery, in Livingston Manor.
Do you want a release?
Oh, I'm here to watch you, to watch these kids releasing fish.
Releasing fish.
Is that
to release a fish?
Hello. So, what exactly should I do now?
So, put your hand on top. So, what you're going to do is just gently bring it down, and you can use one of our fish slides and just slide it into the water. You may need a little extra water to go with it so he doesn't get stuck along the way.
What is in here right now?
That's a brown trout. Yeah, it's called a fingerling right now, and they're about 2 inches long, and we're releasing probably about 500 today.
I thought fingerlings were potatoes, but this looks like a fish.
It's a fingerling trout. It's a fingerling brown trout.
Okay, into the waters of the Calicoon Creek.
It goes. Be free.
Right on this rock over here, and you could just release him right over there. So put the cup in the water and then just tip the cup.
There you go. Have a good life in the Calicoon Creek.
Okay. Oh, my goodness. There you go. I'll take your cup.
Well, since you're part of the landscape here, what is your experience?
I'm Peter Colasar, and I've participated in this for a few years. And it's a great joy to see the kids so involved with the nature and the little trout swim away. So we're at Calicoon Creek. Calicoon Creek is a tributary of the Delaware. So they're putting these little trout in. The trout may grow, and the trout may eventually migrate downriver into the Delaware for the benefit of all of the fishermen up and down the river.
Do you want to go down the slide, or do you want to let her release them out here?
I saw
them. Oh, they're going down.
My fishy. It's
fishy is brown trout, but somehow it's blue.
Got a little blue on it?
Yeah. He is fully blue. He is different shades of blue.
Did you name him?
No. Oh, I wonder if somebody will catch him next year.
We're taking the pH and the temperature of the water.
And what are you doing it with?
Thermometer and a pH bottle. Oh. Come on, Ricky.
It looks like that water turned blue. Do you know what that means?
It's good. Yeah.
The number is 7.6?
Yeah, just about.
Just about. More like seven.
Yeah.
Well, we're all set up to give a little casting lesson to all the kids. And I thought that before the kids started, we could do one with you. Have you ever tried fly fishing?
No, I haven't tried it, and I'm like a kid. I'd like to try.
Okay,
so I am left-handed.
All right, we can do accommodate that. The thing that's strange about this is that these little flies that you're casting have no weight, so you can't cast them. So the trick is that the line has some weight. So what you're doing is you're throwing a line, and to throw the line in front of you, the first trick is throw the line behind you. Throw it behind you, you pause, and then you throw it before you. So up, pause, down.
So you're holding the pole up at 12 o'clock, but the line
exactly
is going
right.
All the way behind
exactly
you.
Exactly right.
This is what we're doing, fly tying in wind. Not so easy, but it's working out. The nice thing about it is that anybody can tie flies. Some of the best fly tiers I know are girls, women. They do a wonderful job. They probably have better hands at it than I do.
Our station here is with Upper Delaware Scenic and Recreational River, which is part of the National Park Service. What kind of animals have you guys seen around here or seen on the river when you've been out and about? Salamanders?
Tadpoles.
Eagles? Yeah. Birds? Fish? You just released some trout off into the water. Awesome. So we're learning about salamanders and newts. Salamanders and newts are amphibians. Tadpoles. Yes. They also start off in the water, you know, as like kind of like a tadpole or a larva stage. And then later, like frogs, they grow up, they grow legs, and they're out on land. So that's kind of the thing about all amphibians is they kind of live in two worlds. They start off in the water and they go onto land. And we have in Upper Delaware around 11 species of salamanders around here. Corinne's going to pass out these brochures so you can see what kind of types that we have around here. Can you take a little look?
Well, this is always a wonderful event. It's a great day for the fifth graders to get out in nature and to see the fruits of their efforts all through the winter of raising these little tiny fish. And the connection of putting them in the stream and seeing them swim away, I think it's something they'll always remember.
Because we want these students to understand what they're doing is learning all about how to care for the fish and how to make sure their environment is taken care of. So, yes, we promote trout catch and release because of that, but it's not a real stocking program. It's just a learning program for them to understand how to preserve and protect our cold water fisheries.
I'm really good.
Who wants a pencil?
What's in your goodie bag?
So we get a highlighter for the center and like a pencil and like a clip to like hang stuff up.
Useful things.
Students tested the Calicoon Creek water for pH levels, temperature, water speed, and stream observations after the release. Longtime supporters like Andy Boyer, Pam Reinhart, Peter Kolasar, and Barbara Demarest from Trout Unlimited were on hand to assist in the activities. The National Park Service presented tables of information. There was a dynamic fly casting demonstration as well as fly tying with woolly buggers. The students all left with a goodie bag donated by the Jeff Bank with some useful items. Story Lori and Ira McIntosh serenaded the fifth grade students and teachers to close the event. Bye for now from Rosie in Jeffersonville at the Calicoon Creek, hanging out with the fifth grade students from Sullivan West for Trout Release Day 2024.
Some people eat bugs, some people don't. Maybe you like to
eat bugs.
I'll tell you one thing, and there's no doubt. Bugs are a perfect food for a healthy trout. Sing the chorus. Bye-bye, trout. Bye-bye, aquatic friends. We hope
job. What a great job you guys do of singing.
What a nice job. Oh, there, look quickly, but what a nice job from Rosie Starr from Farm and Country out at the Calicoon Creek this May as they release the trout fingerlings into the stream. Maybe they've grown up and folks are out meeting them again. Joined in the studio now. Oh, and a reminder, tune into Farm and Country tomorrow with Rosie Starr at 10 here with Mr. Jason Dole, that voice you hear.
Hey there.
To come in and give us a preview of tomorrow's music sale.
Well, it's... first, I just have to reiterate that bugs are a good food for healthy trout.
This is true.
That's going to be stuck in my head now.
Do we have any trout-themed music back there in the music sale?
No, but we might have some Everly Brothers that we can appropriate.
That's true.
And put different lyrics to.
So, yeah, our music yard sale is tomorrow here at our Liberty Studios. Folks have been asking about the rain. We've got you covered. No worries. We've got it rain or shine here tomorrow starting at 9. Jason's here to give us a preview of some of the stuff. We've been kind of teasing in the promos and in sort of our conversations about this some really great vinyl that's come in.
Yeah, you know, I actually made a new promo where I said, you know, like these are the coolest records you're going to find at any yard sale for miles and miles and miles around this weekend. So if you want
to
cool
some of the titles.
Well, you know, for instance, it's interesting to me that we're seeing more, I think, 80s stuff coming in than we have in the past. And I don't just mean the pop, though. We do have, you know, like Whitney Houston, the Go-Go's, Flock of Seagulls, Madonna, the Police. But there's an amazing mix of punk, electronic, kind of semi-underground, art pop, the Vapors, Minutemen, Black Flag. And, you know, Nick Forte, who's been doing this for years, says, I've never seen a Black Flag record come in. Art of Noise, Devo, Slap, Cabaret Voltaire, the Boomtown Rats, even the Silicone Teens. I had to laugh when I found that. We got a Gary Numan single that he actually autographed. You know, looks just like his signature. So we're putting that out there. And these are just some amazing donations that we got. I think one person actually said it was her husband's collection from when he's a college DJ. And we got a few of those that look like, okay, this could be like a hip DJ in the late 70s or 80s. We've also got lots of jazz in the $5 records. I've actually kind of combined one box. It's mostly jazz, but there's jazz in the high value and everywhere. But like everybody, Bud Powell, Dexter Gordon, Coltrane, Fats Navarro, amazing Mingus compilation, Ornette Coleman, Cannonball Adderley. There's a lot of these Wyndham Hill jazz and jazz related instrumental records, and they look good as well. There's some soundtracks. Stand By Me, Miami Vice, Merry Christmas, Mr. Lawrence. It's by, you know, Ryuichi Sakamoto, who just passed away last year. The David Lynch Dune soundtrack by Toto, cool. Which, again, you could put that in a frame. It just looks
the original
gorgeous.
Dune.
Koi Aniskatsi, which is not the only Philip Glass record that we got. We got some of that, too. We've also got some sets and series. There's an Atlantic Best of Soul artists like Wilson Pickett, Aretha, Sam and Dave, Otis Redding. There's a Capitol Jazz Classic series. There's at least 8 of those, like Art Tatum and Duke Ellington. And there's lots of artists, big name artists, have multiple albums. A lot of Joni Mitchell, a lot of Creedence Clearwater, a lot of Bruce Springsteen, you know, and then like a few from like Elvis Costello, Bob Dylan, Pink Floyd, Bowie, Johnny Cash. So it's I've been deep in the records.
You've been deep
week,
in the vinyl,
and,
so
and
stock
that's
up,
what I'm looking at.
So come in and stock up on your vinyl. We've got stuff for everybody, as Jason said. We've also got some equipment.
Yes.
We've got some audio equipment that has been tested, some that's not been tested.
We just got a Bang & Olufsen tuner or receiver that just walked through the door.
Just now.
Like people are still donating even now.
Yeah, so that's tomorrow, the music yard sale. It's here at our Liberty Studios, 2758 State Route 52 in Liberty, 12754 for your GPS. We'll be here at 9. We'll go to...
Rain or shine.
Rain or shine. We hope until 3. We might see some thunderstorms there, so try to get here early to grab that good stuff. And also, just a reminder, this is the yard sale. It's sort of the end of summer. Let's clear some stuff out. Put some good stuff out, too. We're going to still have our big annual music sale in November, the Saturday after Thanksgiving. That's at the Liberty Mall. So we'll have plenty of stuff there too. But if you want to grab some of these things that we've talked about and grab a few bargains at our yard sale, come see us tomorrow at 9 at our Liberty Studios. Jason, thanks for going deep into the vinyl.
No problem. We'll see you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow. That's all for this edition of Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
Support comes from Jeff Bank, Sullivan County's community bank, celebrating 110 years of service this year. Offering deposit and loan products for all your banking needs. Member FDIC and an equal housing lender. National Mortgage Licensing System and Registry Identification Number 405318. Jeff Bank. Still banking strong. And support comes from listeners like you who donate at wjffradio.org.
Hi there, this is Brian, host of The Secret Show, Friday nights at 9. I'll be playing a mix of indie, alternative, college, rock, and pop, some new music, and some old classics. That's The Secret Show, Friday nights at 9, only on Radio Catskill. Listen local.
WJFF Jeffersonville, streaming live at WJFFradio.org. You're listening to Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR. Today's weather, it's going to stay cool. Could see an afternoon shower, maybe early evening shower. High only 65 today, low 61 tonight. Tomorrow looks like heavy thunderstorms in the afternoon, high 75. And then Sunday, humid, sun, clouds, 76. Not as warm Monday, Labor Day, high 67, but sunny